Hi everyone. In this episode, I sat down with Kai Kite. He's a classically trained violinist and composer who's been able to perform around the world sharing his craft. He graduated from Stanford University, where surprisingly he didn't study music. He graduated actually from the School of Engineering, where he was selected eventually as a design fellow for the venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins. I first met Kai while he and I were both presenting at a conference called Wisdom 2.0. And if you haven't had the chance to check out the conference, it's definitely worth a quick search. It's a conference where mindfulness and technology intersect, and it's definitely a switched-on community. So when he was performing, he dropped into this version of Michael Jackson's Smooth Operator, and it was just so good. And he goes on to explain in his presentation of his path toward being able to allow his music to speak. I think that we capture in this interview how much he really loves music and how his practice, his love for practice and figuring out how to get better, and how that has led him to this quest and this interest in innovation. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time in early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading. But it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product. And they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a two-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well, so be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. So let's just jump right into the path that led him to now, where he wants to go, his psychological framework, and the mental skills that he practices that have led him toward mastery in his own life. So thank you for coming in, Kai. We've had the pleasure to meet each other up at the Seattle Seahawks, and I've followed your work for a while. The first time that I was exposed to you was when you were playing at Wisdom 2.0, which is obviously a conference about mindfulness and you know, the path toward a better version of yourself. And, you know, what I came to find is that you had or have a way about yourself that's grounded, that's personable, but also really pushing the edge in your craft. And obviously the craft is you're a violinist. Can you bring us into your journey that led you to just pushing some boundaries a bit and really having a deep understanding of your craft? And so can you just take us through that journey and like take it all the way back? Like, where did this start? Where did this come from? What was your childhood like? Let's just first anchor into the journey of what this is about.
Yeah, so I started playing the violin when I was 3 years old. So tiny. It was like the size of my entire body. And apparently I saw it on TV and was inspired to try to find out how to do that. And my parents luckily found a program in the DC area where I grew up that I started playing in.
So your parents followed your interest?
Yes.
Is that how that was? So you were more interested?
Yeah, so neither of my parents are musically talented at all. They have great interests, but no one in my family, I don't think, even extended family, is a musician.
So, okay, so how old are you now?
I'm 23.
23. Okay, yeah. So 20 years ago, you were watching on TV and something sparked for you.
Yeah.
Now, 20 years later, do you have any sense of why the violin? Do you have any sense of how that called you?
I can't. It was so early, at 3 years old. I can't really say as to why. I think when I started to come into my own as a person, like having more memories and thoughts, I'd already had a baseline talent with it just because I started so early. So when you start with the violin, it sounds awful. And so I was lucky that I didn't have memories really at that point, right? I couldn't really internalize how bad I probably sounded. And so by the time I was like 7 or 8 years old, when I started having more developed thoughts and ideas, I already had that baseline skill set. And then it was just a way to express myself. It was my social environment. A lot of my friends did music, and so it was just a part of what I did by that time point.
Yeah. Have you noticed, as you're on this path, have you noticed that there's this merge between your identity with what you do, or is there a clear separation between the two, that what I do is a reflection of who I am? Or is it more complicated, like I am a violinist?
Yeah, so that's something I've been dealing with my entire life. So I think when you start with something so early, and especially on something where you're on a platform, right? You're on an exposed stage when you perform. And so it can feel like your entire identity is kind of wrapped into how well you do. And especially if you start early and show aptitude at it, you know, you get praise and like you're rewarded for it. And so you kind of feel like, okay, well, wow, like this is the way to do things, like doing well on this stage. And I think that's something that I actually dealt with for a long time, especially as a child when I was younger, was putting a lot of pressure on myself for each performance because it would feel like, you know, this is me. If I don't do this, then what am I, really?
And what you just said is a really big statement. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to work with people at the world stage for a long time. And one of the things that I'm able to take away from the experience is that when people are really good at a young age, they get really connected to their identity, to their performance. Those two things start to merge. And as soon as they begin to decouple those and pull those apart, meaning what that sounds like is that I am not just a violinist. I am not just an athlete. I'm so much more. And that craft that that I'm expressing is an extension of me, but it doesn't define me. Mm-hmm. And you're nodding your head like you understand that, like you've battled.
Now, yeah.
Right? Okay, so can you walk us through and maybe think about, a 12, 14, 15, highly talented young kids that might be listening, or parents that might be listening and saying, God, my kid's really good too. Like, is he or she struggling in that same space?
Hmm. Yeah, so for me, you talked about the separation between who you are internally as a person and what you do. And I think for me, the most important thing in that regard was diversity of experiences as I grew older. And so while my plan originally was to, do the whole conservatory thing, nothing but music, but I didn't do that. So I was fortunate. I was able to go to Stanford, and I didn't study music. I studied design there. And so I had this whole background that was, okay, well, I'm doing this too. But then I also grew up playing basketball. So I just made sure that it wasn't the only thing that I did. So I had some perspective on it.
Okay, and, this is really important. Yeah. You drop the word Stanford like it's a run-of-the-mill university. Top university. You were really good at something at a young age, and then you went to one of the best universities in the world, not for that. Yeah. That's not what opened the doors for you?
Yeah. It's funny because I'm doing a lot of things with music now that I would not be doing, pretty sure I would not be doing if I did go to a music school. And that's because it just exposed me to a different type of mindset. So,
What exposed you to a different mindset?
Being at Stanford in that environment. And I'll tell you what I mean. So a lot of my experience in college wasn't necessarily with music. It was around entrepreneurship and design and making small tests and being comfortable with failing. And all of my classes were kind of centered around that idea. How can you test something? How can you try something? How can you be okay with not having the answers and then figuring them out along the way? And for me,
which is 180 degrees away from, you know, like classically trained musicians, right? Which is the pursuit of perfection,
right?
Right. The crippling sometimes.
Yeah. And so it was funny because so in high school, all of my teachers, not all of my teachers, but most of them in, you know, the traditional classical violin setting, which I was in, there was one way to do something. You listen to the conductor, you listen to the teacher who kind of sets the goal for you. But in most of my experiences in college, quite different. They were, okay, I don't have the answers, but I have a process, a framework that you can use, and you're going to come up with a solution yourself.
Was this in the entrepreneurial classes, or was this in your music training as well?
So just, I only took private lessons in college. I didn't take any compositional classes or anything like that. They were in the design and entrepreneurship classes.
Okay, cool.
And so while I was sitting in those classes, I was taking notes, but I knew that I was going to apply them to other areas as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't exactly say that at the time, but I knew that what I was learning I could translate into other areas because it was such a stark perspective than my upbringing and kind of the value system that I had. And for me, it kind of comes down to one simple idea, and that's just being comfortable and accepting the fact that you don't have the answers, that there's no one way, that there's multiple ways of doing things, and that kind of the journey is being comfortable with that fact. Because before it was, okay, well, I have to work towards this one thing, and this is how you do it, and you're kind of saying that you have all the knowledge and all the answers, but by admitting that you're going to fail at some point and accepting that, it frees you up a bit, and that's led to a lot of the things that I'm able to do now.
Yeah, because you're right on this idea of, you know, create, iterate, break right. It, iterate again, you know, and that sounds like that was, you probably needed that at some point in time.
Definitely.
Because the course that you're taking in classical, trained as a musician, was very different.
Right.
Yeah. So if there's no one way to mastery, and, you know, obviously this podcast is about finding mastery and just understanding the process, you know, and I'm interested in it. You know, you're living it as well to want to explore this. If there's no one way to mastery, are there some key elements that you would say, like, these are the main rocks that I got in the container, and this is some of the stuff that worked for me to be on this path of pursuing mastery?
Yeah. So there are kind of two ideas that mastery come down to for me. And the first one is curiosity. And curiosity meaning being open-minded, but with a particular purpose. So curiosity so that you can increase the possibilities around you, right? You always think of like the masterful person as the person that has an idea out of thin air, but actually it's because they were curious about something and took an insight from a different place that they then involved into their work. And so this is something that's been extremely helpful for me as an artist, right? I'm a classical violinist, but I'm curious about other genres, right? I don't just block them out. And so the way I kind of look at curiosity is that, you know, you should be curious about things that are different in other areas. You can be curious about things that are great, right? When you see someone play a piece of music that sounds beautiful, like, are you just sitting back and saying, like, wow, that was great? Or are you really curious to learn how they did that? Are you curious to uncover the process? Mm. And then also curious in the unexpected, curious in things that you can't predict, and curious about the things that, you know, that just come out randomly. And I think a lot of times we have plans and we kind of reward ourselves on how well we stick to that plan and get it done. But a lot of times there will be ideas that come out of the blue, and taking the time to explore them a little bit deeper, I think, leads to mastery as well, too. So curiosity is one point. And then another, I think, perspective and idea that's been really helpful for me as an artist is the idea of intention. And I use the word intention because I think purpose is like an overarching word that you feel like you have one purpose in life. But intention for me means that in anything you do, you have to decide why you're doing it and anything that you're doing. And so this is something for me as an artist that, and as a performer, I ask myself that question anytime I do something. And let me explain further. So for me as a classical musician, I used to just be caught up in, you know, the technique, like hitting the right notes. And that's how I would judge myself, my performance. But the music didn't sound that good. The audience wasn't as connected to it because, you know, my intent was just to, you know, follow the rules, play it right. But I realized that the true intent, the true purpose of music is to actually connect with people. And I started to change the way I was doing things because I started to put people first and that connection. And so I started to, you know, change the technique a little bit. I started to hold a note a little longer that wasn't written on the page. I would play around with it more because, you know, audience member, they don't care if I hit all the right notes. Like, you don't know. When you heard me play last week, you didn't know if I messed up or not, right?
No.
You didn't know what was right or wrong, but it was the idea that you could feel something. And so a big transformation for me was, okay, the intent of my work is to make someone feel something. It's not to hit every single right note. And the idea comes back to this idea of failure, that it's impossible to play every single right note. Right? There are too many uncontrollable forces for that to happen, but it is possible to have that intent, that focus of saying something. And so for me, it's intent in controlling what you can control. And that's been very helpful for me.
Yeah, you're hitting some really core nuggets that I embrace as well. Mm-hmm. And just for folks that are listening right now, for context, last week what we did up at the Seahawks is we created there's a mini camp that was going on. And in that mini camp, you were invited to come up and demonstrate your craft, and then you were able to speak to the athletes about your insights, and it was really well received. The next day afterwards, there was comments about from the coaching staff and athletes about that you literally struck a chord with them on staying with it and going forward, and not working to be perfect, but working to be competent in adjusting to whatever comes up.
Right.
And you know, that connection with the music, the person, the moment is something that really struck a chord, I think, with many people. So it was awesome. It was fun.
Yeah, that was
Did you
amazing.
Have fun?
Yeah, it was amazing to share. Yeah. Especially, it was so unexpected. People did not expect, I'm sure, a violinist at football minicamp for there to be such a clear translation and insight to take away from it. I think it was really beautiful. And just talking to players after was great as well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. That was great. I mean, okay, so let's talk about more of that in a minute, like, because we'll come back to this. Yeah. But I want to get into really the mechanics of how you structured your day as a youngster working to get good at this craft. Mm. Was this a relentless training that you went through, like a deep practice, or was it sporadic? And
I was kind of obsessed younger, and it was nice looking back at it. And I always try to get back to this point because I wasn't really thinking about the end result at all in terms of the way I practiced. I would just go, and I didn't go to a music school in high school. I went to just a typical high school, and I was doing other things as well too, but we would have a lunch break for an hour and a half. Ridiculous. You should never give like a kid that long of a break, right? And we would have free periods, and any time, you know, before school, after school, at lunch, free period, I was practicing to the point where I think the head of the music department had to give me like a key to the room, because I would always ask him before, like 7 a.m. before he even got to work, for the key to the room. And it was just because I loved doing it. And so for me, the skill just developed from this need to get just like a little bit better each day. And yeah, I don't think I even had, it was a beautiful time because I didn't even need to make a schedule.
How old are we talking about?
I'm saying between the age of 13 and 18.
Yeah, so you loved it.
Yeah, I loved it, but it wasn't just the act of it. It was just something pulling me to it. And so now I'm busy. I'm doing like multiple things. And so I always have to set a schedule for it to make sure that I do it. And it's just part of things pop up now. Yeah. But at that time, it was beautiful because whenever there was that open time, there was something automatically pulling me back to it. And I think it was just the idea of getting a little bit better each day. And the idea of having like something you can play just with your fingers and in maybe in half an hour time, being able to play something that you couldn't before was just kind of addicting.
It sounds to me like, you know, I'll just tag that word addicting, that you were hungry for progression.
Yeah, progression.
Right, like it was the get a little bit better, a little bit better. Can I get a little better? And if you wrap that full circle with your curiosity, this end intention, it sounds like no one had to tell you to do it.
Oh, no. No,
right? And never. What you fell in love with, which was the incremental growth.
Definitely.
And being, you know, that progression, seeing how far you can take it.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with what other people thought of you or...
No, so I was like one of the only violinists in my school.
Where did you go to school?
So I went to a school, it was called the Landon Schools in Maryland, a private school. And for me, it was just something, my social groups were different. Like I was on the basketball team, I was doing all these other things. But for me, there was nothing anyone could say that would make it not seem as important. You know, there was nothing anyone can hold over me because I think any child, any person deals with this, just kind of like self-acceptance. But at an early age, I just became fine with being myself and different. And I think what that came down to is that for anyone's experience, or I think we all have different like cultures and social groups, but at an early age, I was able to see that, you know, okay, you have these set of beliefs, but there's someone in the world that has the exact opposite. And neither of you are right or wrong. There's just what you believe and what you bring to it. And so I was able to see that, traveled to a few places when I was younger. And so for me, my actions have never been controlled by the people that are right around me. It's always around kind of like a larger idea, a larger thing.
Did your folks teach you that? Or is this something that you just picked up from mentors, or just something that's been, you know, a guiding theme in your life?
So I haven't talked about this yet, but I spoke about this at Wisdom, but one of the changing, or I guess transformative times for me, it was actually an experience with my mother back when I was in high school. And it was when she found out that she had breast cancer. And I remember she sat me down, we were talking for like hours, and she was just telling me all these different stories about things that she wished she would have done, and how she was kind of like walking through life, or I think the term she used was stumbling through life, just going with the flow, and that her decisions weren't hers. And I think the term she used, that she felt that she missed out on something because she didn't make her decisions. And that just stuck out to me. And I realized that, you know, I don't have to wait to get diagnosed with something that, you know, there's another option. And so for me, I've always had, since that experience, even a little bit before, I kind of had it, but that was that moment where like I have that so deeply in me that there's nothing someone can say that will alter me differently. And it's just so strong inside of me. And unless if it's someone that knows me really well, like if she says something like that, or if my girlfriend says something like that, then yeah, I'll listen deeper to that. But from a surface level, if you don't have that like intense understanding of where I'm coming from, then I'm very particular as to what can guide my behavior. If it's not internal to, you know, what I believe is the right thing to do.
Yeah, there's some strong conviction, even the way you're saying it now, there's strong conviction that you've got some core principles that are guiding how you operate in life. I want to know what those are in a minute. Oh, yeah. And then you've got a real strong conviction that you're staying true to them, no matter what someone says or doesn't say.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to Hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's Hydro.com, Hydro.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out.
Okay. So let's talk about your philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, like what are the guiding principles in your life?
Yeah. So for me, it was funny. I was having a conversation with someone last week. He's a college student out in Tennessee in Nashville at a place I spoke at a couple of months ago. And we were just talking about ideas and he asked me the same question. And I use this analogy that I'm going to share again. It was that I realized that I use this idea of like the sunset principle. And let me tell you what that means is that, let's say you're at, well, recently I was at the beach and it was just like the most beautiful sunset. And I was thinking, you know, somewhere in the world, there's someone who's going through something completely different from me, but they still probably see that same sunset. And there's like a common beauty between it. And for me, in terms of my values or philosophy, I always try to go for those sunset feelings, those sunset ideas that no matter what external difference or experience you're going through, there's still something there. And so I don't think I found them yet, but I'm always on the search for them. And so for me now, one of those is just like gratitude. One of those things, wherever you are, if you show gratitude towards someone, isn't that a sunset thing that no matter where you are, you'll see it, you'll experience it, and you'll feel something that's common, or just helping other people, being honest, giving all of yourself to something, like working hard, those things. And so I'm always on the search for, okay, what are those things now? And it's been really fascinating this past year, because what I do is, you know, I take music, I perform in places like, you know, for a football team, right? Unexpected places, and I find common connections, whether it's like a team or a business, a school, a company, and I find common connections between my experience and theirs. And, you know, done this in places like Germany, Mexico, all across, and there's certain things that just connect with people. And so for me, one of those things as a performer is just the idea of vulnerability. So, you know, for Wisdom, even last week for the Seahawks, I shared part of my experience that wasn't perfect, that, you know, you see performers on a stage and you don't hear how they suffered from stage fright. You don't hear that. But for me, I'm not trying to separate myself. I try to kind of share that because I think, you know, you and I both can feel the same way about something.
Yeah, I want to get to that stage fright, that part of your conversation.
Yeah.
And then before we move from your philosophy, do you have a phrase or a statement, or like have you anchored this in a way that's really crisp, or are you still working to shape
the sunset idea?
Yeah,
I haven't. It's not. I don't think it's at any complete stage.
Yeah, so it's not like one phrase.
I'm on a search for that. I'm on a continual search for that, and that's kind of an everyday thing.
And if I think about how you are searching, I've come to know that you're more introverted than extroverted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So do you write?
I write a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that how you get it out of your head?
Yeah. So one of the most helpful things for me is actually just meditation. And so every morning I wake up, I just sit for 20 minutes. Mm. And I'm someone, I can talk a lot too. I do that for a living. I talk to people, I enjoy it. But something I've learned to do is to just appreciate that quiet side, because, you know, I can look like I'm zoning out, or I can look like, you know, I don't have a nice face on, or look like I'm doing whatever, but internally it's loud inside of there. And internally there's so many things going on that I'm just thrilled about, that I'm excited about, that no one would tell based on my outside expression. So like,
you mean
always,
like there's a lot going on inside your mind on a regular basis?
Yeah, like ideas. No, I'm saying that like when I take that time to just be by myself, it seems like this quiet, you know, oh, he's just being in this internal zone by himself, but it's loud. There's so many things, and I found that I need to take time to allow my brain to calm down so that those internal voices that are kind of hidden can come out and appreciate them and capture them. And so I'll do that every morning. I literally sit down, I have like a little dim lighting, and then I just have a notebook next to me, and I sit down.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
It depends. I'm an early bird, so like maybe 6 a.m. or something like that.
And so is it the first thing that you do when you wake up? Or
yes.
do you brush your teeth or get food?
I like brush my teeth, drink. I think I drink like hot water and lemon every morning. I heard that was a good thing to do, so I started doing that. I've been healthier.
Yeah.
But I make sure it's the first thing because it grounds me. And so anything I do after kind of comes back to that intention.
Yeah.
I get less distracted and I get more out of myself.
Okay, so
when I do it that way.
The way you've described meditation is actually pretty sophisticated, because most people have this idea that they sit down and they take some breaths and then they can't quiet their mind. And then they throw their hands up like, I can't do this. I can't quiet my mind. And the way that you've described it is that when you quiet down, just slow your brain down, slow your mind down, slow your body down just a bit, that you have a higher awareness of the inner dialogue.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, is what you work on doing is not judging things, but just listening.
Yeah, listening.
And following, right? So people will know in the way that I talk about meditation is like in two different camps. One, a single point meditation where you just follow one thing over and over and over again.
I was going to talk about that. I didn't know, but that's kind of how I view it.
Single point. And there's a whole camp of things you can do on that category. And then contemplative meditation, which is just,
that's exactly how
just following without judgment, just, you know, just watching and observing and being curious. And it's a great way to get clear about those things that are percolating for you.
Yeah, I was just going to share that.
Yeah,
I'd love to read more about what you've done in that space, just because that's how I do it. So sometimes I do meditate where I'm just trying to follow my breath or just follow one idea. And that's very valuable in terms of coming back to my focus and relaxing and things like that. And then the contemplative one is what I enjoy also, which is in that often when I start my day, it's maybe more of the single point when I start my day, just to kind of get grounded. But throughout the day, I'll come back to that contemplative one. I'll just sit down and kind of see where it goes.
Got it. Yeah. So in the morning, you'll do for 20 minutes, you'll just follow your breath.
Yeah. Or, I mean, yeah. it's not strict, but yeah. The more I'm thinking about it, the morning time when I first wake up, that's more of my intention with that, is to kind of ground myself to make sure that I'm focused and can kind of control what I can control in the day. It's just a nice grounded.
Yeah. You know, and the other benefit, the nice benefit that we get from it, one, it there's all these physiological advantages that we get. It sets our parasympathetic in a way where, you know, we're turning off the fight or flight response, even though we've only been up a few moments, right? So we turn that off, or more sophisticated way is that we activate our parasympathetic, which is the recovery part of the process, our homeostasis. And then what happens is, if we're going to refocus on one thing, if it's just your breath, that's totally cool, that you get training at refocusing back to this moment. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've talked about, my take on this is that life happens in the present moment. And if you're not in it, you're missing it.
Yeah.
And so we can train our minds to be more here now, be more where my feet are, be, you know, here where the breath is. So yeah. And, sometimes I don't talk about meditation very much myself, mm-hmm. because it can sound so out there. But it is difficult, and it is challenging, and it is easy, right? Like it's all of those things together. Okay. Speaking of challenges, this is, I don't know if you're able to talk about it, but some people struggle with this a little bit, to talk about the dark side of being one of the best in the world and or pursuing that path. And there's a cost that I've come to observe and understand for pursuing mastery. And do you have any thoughts about what some of the costs might have been for the path that you've chosen?
Costs. Could you elaborate on?
Yeah.
Or do you just mean like any kind of negatives?
No. Okay. So let me elaborate. I say this often, is that if parents knew what I knew about pursuing mastery and pursuing excellence and pursuing being the number one in the world out of whatever our population is today, that they might not push their kids as hard, because there's a real dark side to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have very particular thoughts about that. So I think with that idea, I view mastery in a different way. I think the core foundation to what you just said is that there's one way to do something. So like one way to be the best tennis player, or the best basketball player. And, you know, there's a set of rules to something like that where, you know, a tennis court, the lines are set. There's only a certain amount of things you can change within it. And so to be the best at that, you're going to have to put 100,000 hours in, right? Like, because the rules are set, you can't really change anything. And for something like that, and I'm trying to think of another example where it's just more mechanical, right? To be the best at it, I think there's a lot of things you have to sacrifice, just because you do have to put in it. Like, whatever you get out of it is based on the things you sacrifice for it. The way I view mastery, or what it is in my life, is how can I offer something different? And so it's not about doing more of something. Like, I can, this music, like one of the pieces I played last week, I wrote in not that like a day. And it wasn't because, you know, I spent so many hours on it, but it sounds great because I thought about something different. I took an idea from another place and brought it into it. And so I'm more of thinking about how can I offer something different? Mm-hmm. And so for me, there's certain things I'm not going to be the person to now to spend 10 hours a day and neglect my family to be great. I want to find a way to offer something different, but still value, put first the things that I value. And so I think it's kind of reframing that, where, you know, greatness isn't about sacrifice, but it's about kind of, and obviously you do have to sacrifice things to reach a certain level, but finding a situation where you can make it more unique. And that's what I try to bring to what I do.
Yeah, very cool. It's a nice reframe away from that you've got to do it rigidly, mechanically for X number of hours, robotically, to become great at something.
Yeah, and a lot of people, especially if you're younger, a lot of people will tell you that, oh, well, you have to do this, this, and this. And I think a lot of situations are different, where you can actually find a unique way to do it, or you can find a different process. You can find a framework from another area of mastery and bring it into this where you can kind of take leaps ahead without having to, and not saying that you don't have to put in the time, obviously you have to put in the time, but yeah, the way to get there, there's multiple
right.
ways.
There's, yeah, 100%, there's multiple ways. There's not just one path. Yeah. It's fresh to hear. However, we need to have a base, right. a base technical skill yeah. or craft. And that base, once that base is large and robust and you've put in your hours, yeah. you know, then, and that's deep, deliberate, focused, you know, for you, it's not a joyful training, yeah. right? In between
lunch. Not all of it though. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some pain involved in that extra kind of depth of focus that's required to get good at something.
Yeah.
But then once you have the base, then you can be creative in the divergent way of thinking about what can I pull from?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So there's just,
I think, yeah. So there's two parts. And yeah. so I think what you're asking now is about like that first part, like that base training.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've put a lot of hours in. And so for me, I guess thinking about the cost of that, because I kind of see where you're asking now is that I think for me, it was just more of like little sacrifices along the way and getting used to making that decision. So, you know, friends asking you to do something or having to say, I'm always saying no to things. And that's always been something I've been doing just because I really want to be great at this. Right. And so saying no to that. And before that used to take a really big toll on me to the point where it would even, I don't know, like some friendships, some relationships wouldn't last. Cause like, no, this is kind of what I wanted to do. But I don't know. Hey, I think it comes with a balance. I think you just have to be grounded into some sense that there are other things out there. And I think if, like, it comes back to intent, right? If you're a musician because you want to be the best at in the world and, like, connect with people together, then, like, on your way there, are you hurting people to do that? Well, then you're not following your intent. Right. Yeah,
or your intent.
Or your, yeah.
Some
your
people
intent.
Don't care.
Yeah. Some people don't care. But intent, yeah. And so, yeah. well, then maybe it's not a cost. Maybe, you know, maybe
that's
it's
right. Yeah.
And so it's just what do you value and making sure that what you value is not just something in the end, but something along the way too.
Yeah. Really cool.
And yeah, I think that the only cost for me was just saying no to a lot of things and saying no to, I wouldn't call it cost because now as I look back, a lot of those things just wouldn't have been good for me anyways. And so just that kind of social pressure a little bit,
yeah, there's
especially as you're younger, you know,
yeah,
to deal with that.
But so. You were saying yes. I mean, there's a phrase that I speak about often, which is that you can't fully say yes until you say no.
Right.
And so you were saying no to some stuff, but it allowed you yes. to say yes to something else.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So it's that the two parts there again. What comes to mind when you think of the single most difficult moment in your life?
Single most difficult. Wow. I think, that's a great question. Let me think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think something I haven't talked too much about, but something that I've dealt with is depression too. It is this idea of kind of like having these internal thoughts in your mind that are kind of just eating away at you. Yeah. And that's something I've dealt with for a couple of years. And they're way more serious cases than what I dealt with. But I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but you talked about imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And so I just being in music or
well, we actually talked about before the mic was on.
Oh, okay.
That was something maybe we get to.
Okay. We yeah. can get to it. But I mean, I'll talk about that now, but being in music, yeah. being in a place like Stanford, right? You see all these great things around you and I've always been surrounded by people who are doing great things.
And I think the reason why this is relevant,
yeah.
this imposter syndrome conversation is because when people work their life's effort to with a goal in mind, and then they reach that goal or they reach that platform, like making a team, mm-hmm. you know, at the highest level or standing at Disney stage for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or wherever one of those kind of monumental things might be. That feeling like I don't fully belong here is something that I've witnessed and experienced in myself as well that is really a thread through people that are really hungry as well.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to honor this, that we look at you on stage and be like, wow, he's really got it together.
Yeah.
And then you shock us with talking about, you know, a stage fright
yeah.
and then talking about, no, I've battled this inner voice in my head.
Yeah.
And can we get into that inner critic and that?
Yeah.
We all have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we can look at people that are on a platform and assume that it's gone, that they're just living this free, carefree life. But no, they just probably been doing it longer. And it's like, for me, I deal with that all the time, like every day.
Yeah. So sorry, I totally interrupted. Go back to like what a difficult time that really captures this.
Yeah.
So way for us to.
Yeah. There was a time just. So where I just wasn't following my internal thoughts, meaning that I was in a place and where I was kind of either comparing myself to others and not thinking that I was good enough to the point where it would just consume all of me, and where I wasn't as nice of a person. I wasn't thoughtful because I wasn't being like as thoughtful to myself, and I wasn't as caring. I wasn't as focused in the point in the present at all. And yeah, I just wasn't my full self. And it was because I was in this constant comparison state. And it was just this time where my values of what I thought of myself, I just lessened in comparison to what was going on around me.
Isn't that amazing that we do that to ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sneaky.
Yeah.
It's really sneaky, right? And it starts with this idea that I want to get better. What is she doing or he doing? Can I do that better? There's maybe nothing wrong with that. That's like a healthy competitiveness maybe.
Yeah.
But then when we turn it on ourselves, I don't know how your exact experience, but we turn inward on ourselves and we cut and we say that I'm not good enough over and over and over again. Before we know it, we're totally deflated.
Yeah. And so that was something that I dealt with actually a lot through college, just being in a place like Stanford. Like, you have your friend, but they're also like an Olympic athlete. They're doing all these crazy things. And it wasn't just that. It was just also myself too. And so what really helped me is actually just a lot of these things that we're talking about today. So meditation, finding that internal time by myself. And so
did someone switch you on to mindfulness?
Yeah. So what I actually went to a therapist because it was so, I was like, and I wasn't on the deepest end of someone that's going through something like this, but it was enough where my relationships and the things that I'm doing are not going well. I need to talk to someone. And so I did that. And we just said a thing like, all right, well, for 1 minute a day, you're just going to sit down and like light a candle. And I was like, all right, that's doable.
Yeah, it's like, better than what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then it was just a value thing. Like, before, I would just say that there's not enough time in the day. And now it's almost like, well, what is your day going to be if you don't do this, right? Yeah. And it was just something that grew. And so, like, each morning, even in college, towards the end of my senior, when things started, like, turning around, and not just externally, like, things for the most part, always externally for me, it like looked good, looked like things, oh, like you'd want that. But when I started feeling more fulfilled with what I was doing, like just happier when I woke up every morning, it was around this time when I just started taking that time, investing that time to be by myself, to appreciate my own thoughts. And it was amazing. Like the first week I started doing it, I was just nicer to the people around me. I started asking more questions because the way I put it was that because I gave myself that time, I could give it to others. And it was just a really important, important lesson.
I mean, you've in the last 30 minutes that we've been talking, you've been, I can't help but understand what I know from my past and history.
Yeah.
And you've done some amazing little things here to share with us, is that one is that you decoupled your performance from who you are. You took, and in that process, you pulled out and away from self-judgment. And hence judging others, obviously, is the natural extension. And when you did that, by finding time to be quiet, to listen to yourself, to be curious, that's the non-judgmental high regard for yourself that you were able to connect with other people. It's not lost on me in this conversation that one of your guiding principles is to use music or to connect with others with music and the music that you're creating.
Right.
And so that connection first began with yourself, and then all of a sudden, you found connections, deeper connections with your music and other people, which are so important, right, for you.
Definitely.
And so that decoupling, that pulling apart is probably where it began for you. And I think that the reason for me why this part of the conversation is important, I haven't met someone yet that hasn't stared down like some heavy stuff that's pursuing mastery. And we don't get to see that or know that, that they are and we are human in this process. We're all kind of cut from the same sense of, do I matter? And I think it's a fundamental thing for us to sort out, like knowing that we matter just because we breathe. And it sounds so, I don't know, it sounds like it doesn't have weight to it, but it really
has everything.
Yeah, there's some real weight to it. Yeah.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they've found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO. apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTru. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTru. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTru comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTru purifier. So just go to aquatru.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatru.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there.
Okay, so knowing what you know now, if you went back and you were 14 years old, you know, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to, you know, your 14-year-old? And I picked that time because you're just starting high school, you know. This is a question of wisdom and insight, you know, that you've gathered throughout the years.
To my 14-year-old self, I think something that I'm all about like systems, right? I think you can tell someone, you know, an idea to do it or of something to do, but I think process is what actually like, helps people. And so I would tell my 14-year-old self to look into kind of meditation and mindfulness, build a habit around this earlier, because a lot of the things that I'm talking about now, even like mindset wise that I'm at right now, which lead to kind of some cool end results, are not because I thought about these things or was told these things. It's because I developed a system, a habit that I could actually use and implement. So let me tell you more. So like when I started meditating, for example, I didn't just say, okay, well, I'm just going to meditate every morning. I created a little board on my door and I would have a little checkbox, and I created this system where, because it was difficult at first, right, finding the time to it. And I was like, all right, just do it for 1 minute, check it off. And then at the end of the week, I'll get this for myself. And so I created a system where it turned into a habit. And
what was that reward?
It was something, I think it was like maybe some basketball. It was just something that I needed that I should have gotten anyway. But I was yeah, just like, right. All right, well, we'll make a game out of this.
Yeah.
And so for me, I would just say, okay, at that age, as early as possible, what kind of process, what kind of habit, really small habit can you build that will kind of ground you in a way for the future? And so it wouldn't necessarily be an idea, it would be a system.
Yeah, so. Very cool. And, you know, I can't help but think of what you said earlier when you were even younger. I think when you were like 8-12 years old, you loved it. You know, like your system was to go try to just get better. Your process was try to just go get better. And maybe what I'm hearing is that there was a little bit of bite at some point that entered. And I say bite, meaning self-judgment. There was a little bit of self-judgment that entered at some point in time. And the wisdom that you would give your 14-year-old self is, hey, don't take it so seriously. Yeah. Invest in the process. Is that part of it?
Yeah. Like, well, so what happens, so I started out with that, you know, love for progress, as you said. Like I would, you know, be so focused on, you know, every day getting a little bit better. It was so much fun. But over time, I got way better than I thought I did. And so, like, because of that, people, you know, give you certain things, awards and kind of rewards and accolades for that. And so it kind of went from this, wow, every day I'm just getting a little bit better. Like, I don't even know what I sound like in comparison. I just know that it's so much fun getting a little bit better. But then people recognize you for that. And so, like, how do you deal with that? Are you still valuing that little bit of progress? Or have you turned to say, oh, well, now I really like these awards I'm getting, right? And so for me, it was that kind of switching from that every day getting a little bit better to awards. And I honestly, to this day, I still, like I told you, I have all these like kind of methods and habits in place, but I still wish to get back to that place of having you want awareness of end results, but I was just so invested in that every day getting a little bit better. And so for me, the systems I have in place now are kind of actually, once I think about it, kind of going back to that childhood immersion. That
so good. Yeah. And I'll just offer you a thought on this, is that I've come to understand that it's not possible to go back, but it is possible to capture a way it felt,
right,
and bring that now.
Yeah,
right. I love that, yeah, it sounds like that's what you're doing. It's like you have a clear and vivid placeholder of what it felt like 15 years ago, and you're saying, "I want to structure my day."
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah, every day. That's what I'm
trying
to do.
So that I can get totally, completely lost and absorbed. And you find it in music, and it sounds like you find it in connections with other people.
Yeah, I'm always looking to do that. So like now, whenever I'm like working on music or you know writing any content, you know. Phone's out of the room, everything's off, I'm zoned in, and it's because I want to find ways to build that back in. And yeah, I think that was a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah, you know, I it resonates for me because that's what I'm trying to do as well. Mm-hmm. Is find moments, extend the moments where I'm fully connected to what I'm doing. Right. And for me, I need a little bit of risk involved in it, a little bit of uncertainty involved, where it primes me in a way to lean in and to be really purposeful and get lost in this moment, whatever this moment is. And lost is a funny way of saying it. It's like completely engaged is the other way of saying it. And you know this, the science around flow state, you know, is amazing. It's the most optimal. It's the highest functioning state that we can be in as a human. And it's really slippery. It's very elusive. And as soon as we think that we're in the pocket, so to speak, we're out. because now we're thinking, you know, it's like that meta awareness is what gets in our way. So I think we're probably, you know, as we're talking now, like hungry and for some of the same things, using a different path.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about your journey. We're starting to get into the framework of how you see yourself and how you see the world. And I'm wondering if we can, you've shared with us about the inner critic. You've shared a little bit about the imposter syndrome. You've talked about your philosophy. These are all framework pieces. Like, can we get into risk taking? So do you have a particular story that comes to mind that captures your relationship with risk?
With risk. Yeah.
Because we all have different relationships with it. So do you have a story that comes to mind?
So it's what I'm doing now. So
like right now?
No, not right. Yeah, this is the biggest. It took a lot for me to come in this room. So just my job right now, right? So I'm not just a performer, but I perform and speak at different companies, organizations, universities across the world, really to share a message, and that's inspired people to kind of bring something new to the world. And I've only been doing this for a year, but it was, I guess, one of the riskiest decisions I made, because I was at this point where there were a lot of other safer options around. Because of my academic background, I could have gotten a job in what I studied. A lot of my friends were kind of basking in their job security too, and I went to Stanford, right? So you're supposed to go do these things.
More so than that, you're actually given awards from one of the top venture capitalist firms in the world, right?
Yeah,
from
Kleiner Perkins. Yeah, Kleiner Perkins. I was like a design fellow. And so there's all these things. And so that point.
You almost don't sound real, right? Like, you know, okay, there's a pause here. Right? Yeah, as we're unpacking this, this is why I was so fascinated to talk with you.
Yeah.
Because, obviously masterful at your craft, went to Stanford, awarded, you know, awards from one of the top VC firms in the world. And you're going on a path that is completely your own, right? You're merging and blending these two. So, and what I'm learning right now from you, this is why I'm so excited, is that you've invested in the process of progression. Right. Maybe I just made those two, put those two together for us, but you know, it's that getting lost in the moment. And when you do that, you're getting better at it, whatever it is. And then you're finding connection with other people.
Yeah.
Does that sound?
Yeah. So for me, I guess, going back into that. So all of the things from that experience that look great are, you know, because, you know, I'm capable, I can focus on something and accomplish something. But for a lot of that you see, I was being pulled by external factors. And so kind of the ideas that we talked about a few minutes ago, just around imposter syndrome and all that, is that a lot of the external accolades that you can see were actually, I didn't feel as great as they might look on a resume, right? And so I got to this point where I was just asking myself, like, is this what I was working for? So I have a very high pain tolerance, so I can work hard. I can, you know, say no to stuff and do things that are harder to do.
Would you call that grit?
I would call it grit, yeah. So I'm willing to put in whatever hours it takes, fine.
And so for those who are listening, like, grit really is defined, you know, Dr. Duckworth has done some great research around this, that it's doing difficult things for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
You know, like really having a dogged perseverance and a dogged focus for an extended period of time and enduring.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like doing difficult things right now, but it's like over and over. Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of sums up my kind of work habit.
Yeah.
But what I realized is that was hurting me because I was using that. It's important to be intentional about where you apply your grit, right? I think a lot of people have this idea that, you know, you just work hard and then you'll get something. But asking, like, why? What are you working towards? Like, what do you really want to accomplish? And for me, I was applying my grit towards kind of like awards, things that looked good. And I was able to get them because I have a high pain tolerance. I can do it. But then I came to this feeling where I was like, okay, is this what I'm working for? Is it for this feeling of like lack of fulfillment? Like on the outside, it looks great, but I probably feel worse than most of these people that wish they were in my position right now. So what does this mean? And so from that point, I was like, at least career wise, I was like, I can come back to this place. Like I know I have the aptitude to come back. But for me, I want to do something that's purposeful, that really just wakens people and inspires them to do something. And so for me, all my energy was, I just applied all that grit towards this. And so when I graduated...
Wait, when you say this, what is
Sorry, what I'm doing now. So the company where I perform and speak in different places, I share this message. And
what is this message?
The message is for people to bring their own... I use the analogy of music. So to bring their own music to the world. So all my music is original. And so to bring those internal sounds and to help organizations create cultures where these sounds can lead to exponential growth together. And I'm just very passionate about that idea. And so I made the decision that the same work ethic that I was applying to kind of end goals that other people had put in front of me, well, I'm going to see what happens if I apply the same work ethic to this crazy idea that I have. And I did that. So after I graduated, actually, I remember, yeah, the day after graduation, I went back home to my parents' home just for like a couple of weeks. And I just worked on this. Sorry, I keep saying this, but on this idea for probably like 15 or 16 hours a day. So thinking about the ideas that I'd want to share, how would I frame it? Who would want to hear something like this? And it's coming to fruition. And so for me, it's just been so rewarding because I probably work more technically than I ever have grit wise, but I feel so fulfilled and I'm still able to give more to my relationships because it's coming from a healthy place of trying to do something that helps people that I really care about. And so,
empathy come from for you? Like caring of others?
So honestly, it comes back to this experience with my mother.
Yeah.
And it's just so deep in me because I think what she shares, like so many people around the world in this country share. And like I said, I'm looking for those sunset principles. And what I think she shared with me was a sunset principle, and not in the positive way, in a negative way of kind of denying your internal sounds that you can bring to the world, or your internal ideas. And so when she said that, and when I think about that, I don't just see her or my family. I see so many other potential people that could be bringing. And I also see the potential of what could happen. Like, imagine a world if like if people didn't need a diagnosis to kind of live with more curiosity and live with more intention. Like, imagine what would that look like if we didn't need to get to that point? If you were at your healthiest form and had this same mindset, like, what? I'm just curious to see what that would look like. And it kind of comes from me being curious about what that would look like for my own family, like my mother, the people that share that with me initially. And so I just see that in everyone. And so that's just kind of where it comes from.
How did your mom do through the process?
She did well. So she had surgery, double mastectomy, breast cancer, and she's doing well now. She's still in Maryland. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Okay, so let's get into some mindset stuff.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears if we can.
Cool.
Yeah. So we talked about philosophy and, you know, kind of your journey, I'm sorry. And we got into some framework stuff, the way you see the world, the way you see yourself. And let's get into like really concrete mindset or mental skills. How do you describe your ideal mindset when you take stage or when you are in a conversation? And there's probably a slight variance between the two, but can you capture, are you really clear what your ideal mindset is? And if so, like, let's bring it to life.
Yeah. So this is really funny and interesting because after I spoke for the place of the Seahawks last week, the kicker, is it Steven?
Yeah.
So he came up to me and he asked me this same question. He was like, okay, you going on a stage? I was just seeing myself going up to kick the ball. Like, this is the same thing. And so he asked me about that. And what I told him, and I'm trying to hear about his mindset too, right? How does he do that with millions of people watching? But for me, it's setting an intent, at least performance wise, it's setting an intention whenever I get on stage that of why I'm doing this. And that's to have fun with it and to let other people experience how much, like, when I write something, I'm in that flow state. When I write music, it's the most enjoyable thing. And so I want other people to see themselves in that experience. I want them to experience the same kind of like emotional excitement and immersion that I felt creating this. And so I say that to myself in my brain, like, I would just want to share the feeling with people. And that's the intention I set whenever I perform a piece of music.
Okay, so let me see if I can capture it. Your mindset is purposefully anchoring to the intent that you want to share what it is that you created so that they can feel some or all of what you felt when you
created. Yeah, so music for me, it's the most powerful language because it's a story, right? So music by itself, and stories are the most powerful piece of language that we have. And so it's a story that translates across any spoken language. So it's most powerful. And so for me, I want to take people through that story because I want someone to come up to me after and tell me a story about what did that remind them of? What place did that take them to? And so for me, I think that's a super powerful position to be in. It's a super, super, powerful is just because you're on stage, it's just you. And so I try to put that at the forefront of my mind because I still battle with, okay, well, I don't want to mess up or wow, there's a lot of people in the audience. And so for me, when I get on stage, I just take a deep breath and it's always a different line, but I come back to that place. And it's just been really helpful for me just in terms of, as a performer, you want to share everything. And so if I smile when I play or anything like that, it's cause I try to, it's funny. I try to ignore the audience in a way to kind of go back to why I really made this piece, the place I was at when I created this. And so to really communicate that most with the audience, you kind of have to ignore them in a way. And so I try to say, how can I kind of bring that memory back? How can I go back to that place of joy of creating this?
Yeah. Okay.
Which is difficult to do, but I always set that intention. So that's kind of a practice.
That's the practice.
Yeah. That's
right?
The practice.
You actually practice putting on an ideal mindset, which is the intent to connect.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So easy. Right. Like when you say it, it's so easy.
Yeah.
but it takes great practice.
Yeah. It takes practice and because your mind, a lot of times will not allow yourself to do that. And I think it's come through a lot of repetition. So having, a ton of performances where I can try to do this and now it's this is what I do. And it takes me to that place a lot of times. So
how do you train confidence?
How do I train confidence? Practicing in different scenarios. And so I talked about this a little bit with the Seahawks last week, but I think it's one of the things that hurts us the most as people that perform on any stage is that we only practice in ideal environments. And when we're trying to perform at a high level, it's never ideal, right? There's always things that are coming against us, forces, right, that make it more challenging to get in that state. And so for me, anytime I perform, I put so many repetitions in, but they're always different, right? When I practice music, I'll practice with other music playing on in the background, or I'll start on the wrong note, or I'll try to mess up in a way. I'll start at a point of dissonance and see how I can get back to that. And so by the time I perform, every time, I've never had a perfect performance, but I'm confident that I'll figure it out. Because I know that at the end of the day, something's going to happen, but the way I practice
there's a deep trust that you're talking about.
Trust,
so you put yourself in a lot of different scenarios so that you can trust yourself in whatever's going to come next.
Right.
And that maybe what I'm hearing is that you'll trust that you can adjust to whatever comes because you've seen, have so many frames, so many different looks at this thing that you're interested in doing.
Yeah.
So it's expanding that comfort zone to be able to, have the uncomfortable, that requires effort,
to
do that.
It's not easy. It takes more effort to, right, it's easy to say, okay, if I do this, this, and this, it will lead to X, right? So if I practice 2 hours a day, play this, it will lead to that. That's easy. But what's harder is saying, if I keep myself off balance, right, what will happen then? And what happens if you kind of practice by keeping yourself off balance, being ready to adjust, you create an energy, you create confidence.
Have you ever? Right? Okay.
And
so
you're not creating a static piece of art. You're creating energy, right? And that's what people feel. And so for me, when I practice now, it's like, okay, well, whatever I practice, it doesn't matter if I don't have that energy. And so how can I train for that? That kind of responsiveness.
Love it.
And that's what matters.
Yeah. And that's something that's pretty advanced.
You know?
And you need to have your base.
Right.
To be able to mechanically be an artist in uncomfortable scenarios. So get the base first and then put yourself in really uncomfortable situations. I'd add one layer to it, that confidence comes from just that little voice that you have. Because you can be uncomfortable and say to yourself, I love this.
Yeah.
Right? And confidence goes up. Yeah. If you're uncomfortable and you go, oh my God, everyone's going to realize that I'm
kind of like
a mess
the story
right
you're
now.
Telling yourself.
Yeah. That that's for what I've come to understand where confidence comes from. But the more frames you have in uncomfortable, rugged, sometimes hostile environments, the more you can trust your voice, which is, I got this.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's see.
It has some backbone to it.
Yeah. Let's see what this is about. Let's see what I got here.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I do. Right. Yeah. So all of that stuff becomes credible.
Yeah.
And all right. Love it. Okay. So let me just kind of go really quickly through some stuff here. Are you more street savvy or analytical?
I think more street savvy.
Do you prefer a slow-paced environment or fast-paced environment?
Slow-paced.
Yeah. Rule follower or risk taker?
Risk taker.
Really? Do you have a high need for control in a room, or are you okay if other people lead?
Depends on what the room is looking like.
Okay. Intellectually competitive or physically competitive, or both?
I'd say intellectually.
Are you more critical or more positive by nature?
Definitely more positive.
Yeah. So what's it like when people are critical of you?
Well, actually, now that you put it that way,
okay,
it's weird. Like, I have I'm more critical than anyone could ever be of me. And so when I hear criticism, I'm just like, okay, well, that's so much nicer than what I said to myself. But I'm positive in the sense that I know there's a way to change it. So I'm not saying the criticism that I have of myself is the end goal. It's like, after performance, if it goes great, right, I'm not just saying, oh, wow, like, people loved it. I'm saying, oh, that was cool, but I think I can change these five things, and I'm positive that if I work at this tonight, tomorrow will be better.
Mm.
And so I think it's both.
Yeah. Okay. Pressure comes from...
an end result that you have in mind, trying to predict the future.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. It all comes down to...
That's a big question.
Yeah. They're fast, but then you don't have to... Just take your time unpacking these things.
See, intent.
Yeah. It all comes down to intent. Love. How do you respond to that word?
Love. Trust.
Ooh. Relationships.
Communication.
My vision is...
to keep getting better tomorrow and today, and to do a little more to keep getting better.
Mm. And then last is, I am.
I am I think I respond by just saying we are the response to that.
I am, we are.
Yeah. So yeah. I think we're all kind of going through similar things, and
I love watching you work for that. Yeah. You had to really work for that.
Yeah. Because I was thinking, like, I am. When I think of I am, I think there's a lot of different ways to go with that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a little pieces of all of those responses in each of us. And so it just kind of depends on the scenario.
Love it. Okay. So for those that are listening, we're in my office right now, and I've got a board behind you that it's a chalkboard. And there's a bunch of phrases that people that are finding mastery in their own life have taken a chalk pen and put their little thing up there. So I'm going to ask you to do it in a little bit.
Cool.
But that, maybe that's one of it. That's really good. Okay. All right. In your own words, I think you said it earlier, but how do you capture mastery? And this is really the last question. You know, how do you capture what this thing of finding mastery, or what mastery is?
For me, it's mastery in finding a process that's repeatable, that works, that you can be immersed in. And then for me personally, that process comes down to curiosity, being open to whatever's around you, and intent. So being purposeful with whatever you're doing at that time. And doing that over a repeated amount of time will lead to the mastery.
So good. All right. So I said last question. Now I'm switching it. What do you see in the next 5 to 10 years for your industry, right? Which is, I'm not sure what industry that is. Like you're
it's always difficult.
You're
when
blending
I have to
like two or three kind of things, right?
Yeah. So this part music, like I'm working on an album this year. So like still trying to go further with that. Yeah. But then it's also like leadership development, personal development.
So let's go bigger. Well, let's go. Too. What do you see in the next 5 or 10 years for humans?
For humans.
Yeah, maybe 10 years out is easier. I don't know. Yeah.
So I think right now we're at this turning point. This is just based on my experience, what I'm passionate about, where the world is so connected, where we're going to ask bigger questions. We're asking why more. And so a lot of things are going to change around lifestyle, career choices. And just in terms of personal choices, a lot of things are going to change because we can see everything now. We see that there's another way of doing it. And there's only a certain amount of time before we start to ask, okay, well, why am I just doing it this way? And so I think as we talk about technology changing and how it has impacted our lives so much in the last 15 or 20 years, I think that technology is leading to openness and seeing the world. And so I think that's going to lead to a lot of the kind of personal life plan systems that we have in place. I think they're going to change in a beautiful way. So in terms of looking at life, in terms of being education to work to retirement, I think all that's going to switch because we're going to see that there's another option. And I'm excited to be a part of that.
You are an optimist.
I am.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. So where can we find more about what you're doing and where can people go?
The best place to see what I'm up to is on my website. So it's www.kaikite.com, which is spelled K-A-I-K-I-G-H-T. And then you can also find me on Twitter at just my name. So at kaikite.
Yeah. Do you have an Instagram page as well?
I do.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. I use that sometimes. And then also.
Mostly Twitter.
Yeah. Mostly Twitter. And then I'm responsive to email too. So it's just kaikite@gmail.com.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. I want to thank you. I loved this conversation. I was looking forward to having it with you. I appreciate what you're doing, how you've captured it. This conversation for me was a joy. So thank you.
That's fantastic. I learned a lot.
Yeah. So, good. Yeah, it's thanks. Both of us. Yeah. So thanks for coming in. Thanks for sharing your life passion and how you understand it, your approach to life and your framework and the mental skills that you're working on. So love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So if you enjoyed this episode, hopefully you can go to iTunes and subscribe to Finding Mastery. And I've also learned that if you hit the like button and share some comments, that helps out tremendously for building this community so we can keep this thing going. And or you can also go to the website findingmastery.net, and what will be set up there is a place for you to log in for your email and all that good stuff, so I could just keep you connected and posted to what's coming, what's next, and all that good stuff. You can also get more information on Twitter at Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And then my last name, Gervais, G-E-R-V as in Victor, A-I-S. And you can also hit us up at facebook.com/findingmastery. So hopefully you go spend some time to check out Kai and, follow him on his adventures. And all of his links and everything that we talked about in the podcast will be in the show notes. And so until next time, thank you for listening, and I'm hopeful to hear really how you're finding mastery in your own life as we use some of these nuggets to take it into our own communities. All the best. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.